reclaiming who you really are and helping you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. Broadcasting to the world, you are listening to Michael Lilborn Williams and the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, 24th of August, 2018. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Michael Williams.
Good morning, Don Bartlett. How are you today, my friend?
I am so well, but I was just thinking as I was reading that intro out, how long have you been the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution? Why do you laugh?
40 years.
40 years. Okay, now here's my follow-up question. Can I have a follow-up question?
No, I think I'm going to ignore you. What is your question, sire?
Don't you ever feel old as dirt? Now, don't you wish you'd just sort of not let me ask that follow-up question?
Oh, I thought you were asking that rhetorically about yourself. I had no clue you would have been addressing me with such a question.
Yes, because simple communication is so difficult. As we get
older. Well, it's simple. You are way older than me, so that's why I would have thought such a thing.
A little respect for your elders then, please. You can't win that one. Hey, bud, did you have a good week? This is your birthday week.
Well, yeah. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. You know, we used to celebrate birthdays.
Yeah, you got birth months now.
And then I remember a decade ago, kids started celebrating their birthday week, and now it's up to their birthday month. So just this week, I decided to celebrate my birthday year. So I'm going to be celebrating my birthday from January the 1st all the way.
You're going to be a drunken bum every single night of the week for a year?
Well, who said I got drunk for my birthday? Now, a bum, maybe, but drunk, yeah.
No, that's true. Who needs an excuse like a birthday, yes.
So, yeah, boy, they sure do extend birthdays now. And boy, the kids really do expect parents and friends to make it all about them for an entire month.
Yeah, they do. It's a different world, I think, we live in. When we say goodbye to this world, you and I, Michael.
It'll be a different one than we came into.
Yeah, we're going to say to ourselves, yeah, we can see how this makes sense now.
Yeah, we've kind of said a long goodbye over all these decades, haven't we? Because the world we were born into just virtually does not exist anymore.
It don't.
I mean, Don, we were born before there was a satellite in the sky. They're talking about space junk. They're talking about how much trash we've left up there. And we were born before anything was up there other than what God put there.
Mate, I was talking with Sean Smith yesterday, and I asked him if he'd ever had to hand crank a car. And he said, no, I know what you mean, but no, I've never had to hand crank a car.
Yeah.
And then I got on to telling him how that you could break your arm easy enough hand cranking a car, and if you tried to hand crank a tractor, it was almost certain death if you didn't jump out of the way when the tractor kicked. And it suddenly occurred to me, gone are the days of dolly pegs, gone are the days of hand cranks in any kind of vehicles, gone are the days of wonder at seeing how a prop jet actually took off and landed, because back then there were no such things as jets. Just propeller planes. And gone are the days of not being able to say, I remember when the men first walked on the moon. My sister calls me a raging sentimentalist. Do you think she's right?
I think you're old.
Well, today we're going to do a biocast, and we're going to bring the real truth out of the gospel.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Galatians wasn't even in the Bible. That's how old I am.
Boy, it compared to what the gospel revolution has been has brought out of the book of Galatians, it is the same as that it wasn't in the Bible before.
Well, it still isn't for a whole bunch of people.
It still isn't for 95% of the Christian world, for sure.
Mate, I had an interesting experience this week. I mean, apart from the fact that somebody maliciously in a bizarre act of I don't even know what to call it, graffitied our horse trough in Eva, Alabama. Apart from that, I was in a Christian
Did you clear this with the office?
I wanted to get written authorization, but your answering machine said, "Hello, this is Mike Williams. You have my blessing to do whatever you want. It's my birthday, and I'm giving you this. Yeah, I'm blessing you with open dispensation to sin any way you want."
Do you believe what I believe about you? With delight, I'm singing over you. Like a bridegroom to his bride, like a father to his precious child, and forever we belong together. I say, I think you're amazing. Ooh, I say, I think you're amazing. Ooh, my love for you never changes. I say, I think you're
family. If you want to get some really interesting input, go no further than 6:30 on a Tuesday night, where Mike Williams addresses little 15 to 18 minute teachings, Bible studies, we call them, and they are the Gospel Revolution page, as opposed to the Gospel Revolution groups. You can get them on the Gospel Revolution groups. That would be Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution, and it would be the Gospel Revolution private group, and it also is being put up on the Gospel of Grace and Peace, Barry Laney's group, and he has dedicated that to the gospel, which is fantastic. You'll see him on all of those Facebook groups, but if you want to get it live and ask questions live and interact live, you need to get onto the Gospel Revolution page, which is a different Facebook area altogether, and you'll be listening to Michael Williams in the Bible studies on Tuesday night. This last Tuesday night, Michael, you covered...
The title of it was a question. Did Paul teach the same as Peter, James, and John?
I think you based that out of Galatians mostly, didn't you?
We focused right out of Galatians. What you come out of the book of Acts with is a profound view of the, and again, the profiles. What we did is we profiled every one of the, we profiled Paul, Peter, James, and John. Their profiles are all in there. And then you can come up with a much more detailed profile by reading their letters that are recorded in the New Testament. Then we go back to Galatians, and suddenly Galatians explodes that this truly is the letter where Paul is directly calling out Peter, James, and John. That's what this letter is about.
Mm-hmm.
and consistently throughout, he is only talking about three people here. He is only warning people about three people here that he names by name. And, you know, we were so taught, Don, that this is God breathed. Therefore, don't you dare read what it says. You read, oh, he's talking about somebody else. And thank goodness he actually names them by name in chapter 2, or we would be stuck with that mentality. But we are no longer bound by the constraints of Christianity to force fit this in with a shoehorn into them all agreeing somehow. The greatest power you will find in the gospel will be found after you conclude that Paul disagreed with Peter, James, and John, and that Peter, James, and John disagreed with Paul. You will never find clarity for the gospel until that resolve is made. And that resolve, you don't even have to make it on your own. The book of Acts resolves it for you. The book of Galatians resolves it for you. The book of James resolves it for you. 1st, 2nd, 3rd John resolves it for you. 1st and 2nd Peter resolves all of that for you. It's just you have to let these things stand the way that they are instead of trying to force fuse them together. These are not fused together as one body of work. It is Christianity that's fused them together, and they rely heavily on Peter, James, and John to keep Christianity afloat. So, Don, I don't have a better thing to do here today than us go back and look at some of these statements in Galatians and reaffirm just exactly who and what Paul is talking about. And well, let's let Paul affirm who and what he is talking about.
Let's go.
So we're going to start in Galatians chapter 1, verse 6.
I marvel that you are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel. That's interesting. He says, you've been removed from the gospel, you've been removed from him.
Yes.
Which is not another gospel, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed.
Powerful. He comes out swinging.
Yeah.
He comes out swing, and he says, I marvel. Now, obviously, Paul found this shocking. There was a, we could check and see what the word marvel actually means since we're going through this anyway.
In the Greek, thaumatzō is the same word as when you look up into the evening sky and you just go, oh, wow, look at the Southern Cross. You go to a circus and you marvel. You go to a circus and you thaumatzō.
Well, Paul was talking about the circus I think he was going through at the time. So he said, I marvel that you are so soon removed. I'm sure removed just means to be separated from, unless it means otherwise as you're looking through here, Don.
It means to change sides.
So not just removed, but switched to another side.
Yeah, to transfer, yeah.
Oh, okay. So they've not just moved away from Paul, they've moved to something else. All right, see, this is good stuff to know. Now, I marvel that you've so quickly changed sides. Wow. Now, with that in mind, he said, I marvel that you have changed sides from him that called you into the grace of God unto another gospel. They've not only switched positions, they've switched people whom they listen to. if you stop right here in this verse, you can see why Paul wrote his letter, because these people were being persuaded of something that Paul says is absolutely incorrect. The other thing that we have to acknowledge here also is, remember, Paul said, all they that are at Asia have forsaken me.
He did, and I think it was 2 Timothy he said that, just before his head rolled into a basket.
Galatia is part of the church at Asia. So see, some of these things, folks, are important to know, because it paints this huge picture for you if you take it all into consideration.
Now, if you read 1:7 in the Greek, it says, which not is being other, if know any, they are being the ones disturbing you and willing to after turn the well message or the evangelion, the good news of the anointed. In other, he's saying these are people who want to come in after me and after turn. That's a word, metastrepsi. They want to change it after the effect.
Yes.
After the fact. Exactly what he said that elsewhere, the Judaizers were coming in after him.
Yes.
And changing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as you said, Paul does come out swinging here, and which is not another. So he is affirming that the he is stating that they've gone to another gospel, but then he kind of corrects himself and says, but it's not a gospel at all. The other gospel is not a gospel. So gospel meaning good news, the other gospel is not good news. It's just not good news.
Well, when you share the gospel and somebody comes in, I think it's A. E. Nock that translates that word metastrepsi as to distort.
Yes.
And that's what religion does. It distorts the gospel. It takes the good news of Jesus and turns it into bad news.
Mm-hmm. Now, our situation we find ourselves in is that we've got an entirely evangelized world to the other gospel. They don't know the gospel of Paul. They've never heard the gospel of Paul, strictly because they've never separated the teachings of Paul from Peter, James, and John. Mm. Now, that has been the great fortune of those of us in the gospel revolution, is that we've identified what scriptures are and what they are not. And we've been able, by doing that, we were able to separate the teachings of Peter, James, and John and compare them to each other. That has been our great fortune to find this wealth. So, and he says, they trouble you. Now, when it says they trouble you, what does that word mean? How bad is this?
Parasontes. You know, when the police arrest you for disturbing the peace.
Uh-huh.
That's what this word means. It's disturbing. It's
Well, I don't know that personally.
You don't? We can arrange for you to see the inside of a cell. I mean, I don't want you to die unfulfilled, Michael.
So now tell me the word again.
The root is terazzo. It's terasontes here. The ones disturbing you. Okay. In recent history, we've seen people in Iran that apparently, to the best of our knowledge, have been paid off by the government to have big rallies. The U.S. is the Satan. And so they're agitators. That's what the word means. They're agitators. And if you had the good news that God loved you no matter what could agitate that?
Yeah, it's not so good a news.
Mm.
But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you. So whoever he is talking about has a lot of clout.
But do we seriously think that an angel from heaven would be the person?
This is a part of Paul's sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
You may even see them like angels. These guys have such a high position that only the angels could rival them.
Wow.
But it makes no difference.
Wow.
It makes no difference, even if the people who have preached another gospel other than what I've taught you, even if they come right up to the ranks of angels, don't listen. Rank means nothing when it comes to truth. Then he says, other than what we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. I think there is a bit of sarcasm on both ends here for Paul, and that is in him mentioning that, saying that even if an angel, he knows that an angel can't, is not going to be their problem, and them being accursed, he knows they're not going to be accursed.
You know that I'm holding my tongue. I mean, you know that this is the best tongue-holding Bartlett you have ever seen in your life.
So, Don, read verse 9 for me.
Well, verse 9 is a repeat. I mean, he felt so strongly about this. He said, and if you didn't hear it before, let me say it again. If any
I thought
man,
I got us over this hump, and it's not.
Yeah, you thought. If any, the word man is added.
Uh-huh.
If any. Now, Paul here presumes to know what angels preach. And why wouldn't he? After all, wasn't the angels who at the birth of Christ said, what?
We bring you glad tidings. And on earth, peace and goodwill toward man.
From whom? Not from other men. It's not goodwill between men. It's goodwill to men. So, and so I'm going to tell you again, because you might have been deaf, you might have been snoring when I said it the first time. So I say now again, if any preach any other gospel unto you than that we have received, let him be
accursed.
I can't say it. I can't say it. This is a family podcast. Oh, bugger it. God damn them. Those perverts. They pervert the gospel. Bunch of bloody perverts. God damn the bunch. God damn a lot of. 10. Shut up. I'm still going on my rant here. And verse 10.
For do I now persuade men or God?
You're right. Sarcasm at the wazoo.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty good at it. For do I now persuade men or God, or do I seek to please men? For if I yet please men, I should not be a servant of Christ.
Now, you think about that in terms of he used to murder Christians.
Mm-hmm.
He pleased men.
Yeah.
But now he's a servant of Christ. If I was still doing that same crap that I used to do back then, I could serve the law or I could serve Christ.
He used that term, remember, Don, when we went through Acts?
I'm old. I don't remember that much of that long. You want to remind me?
Yes. He made this very same statement about pleasing men or serving Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And in the context of that in the book of Acts, he was saying that if he were preaching the law, he would be pleasing men. But he doesn't preach the law because he's here to serve Christ.
Mm-mm.
So here again, he makes comment to that once again. Pick up in verse 11, Don, see what we've got.
But I certify you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me, or if you like, my gospel, is not after man.
Now, this is interesting. About Paul's declaration about his learning process, we are going to find out in the next two verses exactly where and how Paul learned the gospel.
For I neither received it of men.
Oh, wow. Nobody taught him the gospel. Interesting.
Neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ. That's the well, it's the same word, the revelation, as the apocalypse of Jesus Christ.
Mm. So he learned it by, now is he talking about the revelation of Christ or by the revelation of Christ? Is he saying he learned it from Christ? That's what I'm asking.
Yep.
What is conspicuously absent is Jesus saying, ah, man, now that I've knocked you off your horse, now that I've got your attention, we've already got a church started in Jerusalem. And James, my brother, has taken it over. And then my disciples are there.
It's my own brother. You're sure to get the good oil from him.
So I'm going to send you up there because we want to follow this pattern that others should teach others that teach others that teach others also. We need to stick with that. So I'm sending you up to Jerusalem. How blatant it is that that did not happen. Now, when Paul says he didn't learn from men, what you're going to find out here is men means Peter, James, and John. I didn't learn this from Peter, James, and John. Now, you may think that we are stretching that a little bit at this point, but once we read through this, you'll see we are not stretching this emphasis that you can already put in here. I did not learn this from Peter, James, and John. I learned it from the risen Christ. All right, let's continue on.
For you have heard of my behavior in times past in the Jews' religion, how that beyond measure, more times than I can tell you, I think it is what it means. Mm-hmm. I persecuted the church of God and wasted it. I mean, you know, people talk about having a bad night out on the booze or having a really bad trip, and they say, or even a really good trip, I suppose, for that matter, and they say, man, oh, I'm wasted. Well, that's what he did to the church. He wasted it.
Yeah. Yeah, scorched earth policy, you might say.
Oh, yes, salted earth, scorched earth. And this is a man saying, he's really, what he's saying is, if I'm going to do something, I do it right.
Yeah. Yeah, he does it wholeheartedly. Now, verse 14 says that he profited by doing that. So keep on reading in verse 14.
Well, that word profited is not what we would call profited. It's prokopto, and it means, and I pursued it. Diligent. Oh, okay. I diligently pursued it, or I grew in the Jews' religion, which I mean, you can't grow unless you're making money. So I don't think it's wrong for us to take that word profited in even the modern sense. And I profited in the Jews' religion above many of my equals in my own nation, in Israel, being more exceedingly zealous of the traditions of my fathers. Now, I think that's a paradoxus, is the same word as when Jesus said, your traditions kill the effect of the word of God.
And that's the word traditions?
That's the word traditions, yeah.
Okay.
So you make, I think Jesus said, you make null and void the word of God through your traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't, I haven't checked that, but I'm pretty certain that that's the same word.
Yeah, that's fine. All right, and then verse 15.
Well, you're just racing through this. But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb, and called me by his grace. I mean, you could just build a doctrine on that if you wanted to. But what he's saying is God birthed me, and God called me by his grace. And when it pleased him to reveal his son in me, that I might preach him amongst the ethnos, the ethnics, the non-Jews, actually, is what that word means, or the... what's it say here in the English? It says the heathen. Isn't it funny how the Jews always thought anyone but them were heathen? Immediately I conferred not with flesh and blood.
Okay. Now, is he making reference to specific persons? So in verse 12, I implied that Paul was implying that this was Peter, James, and John. Now, he says... immediately I conferred not with flesh and blood. I think that we could say flesh and blood is Peter, James, and John.
Well, it's a stretch at this stage, but I agree with you. He makes it absolutely clear in a moment or two that it's no one else but those people. But right now, it's almost like he's teasing. He's saying, I didn't get it by flesh and blood. Who would that flesh and blood be? I think he's teasing his readers a bit.
Let's see, beginning in verse 17, what does this say?
Neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles
before me. Wow. So the ones that he did not receive from, the ones he did not confer with, he is now naming. I did not talk to the apostles, those that were apostles before me.
So he doesn't actually name them yet. But he does, I mean, if by now you haven't figured it out, you're kind of stupid.
Yeah. So we've got not the name, but we've got the very specific group of apostles that were before him. And we know who those apostles were.
He goes from men to flesh and blood to apostles. I think he might be narrowing it down.
He's narrowing it down more and more. So continue reading there.
So I didn't go up to Jerusalem to them who were apostles before me, but I went into Arabia and returned again unto Damascus.
Okay, so here is this trip into the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And then tells us how long that he was there. So this is the period of time cited in the book of Acts that Paul spent this 3 years in the desert being taught by Christ. This again harkens back, Don, to the book of Acts. Someone else documents Paul's story. Now Paul is documenting his story about the 3 years that he spent in the desert.
Was he on a horse with no name? Our younger people will not even get that, and that's okay. We should have some secrets.
No, they wouldn't. So what's verse 18? Now, how long did he spend here in Arabia?
Apparently 3 years. Verse 18 says, then, after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem. It's like he's saying, then after I got the good oil, I went up to listen to these other turkeys. Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter.
All right. So now he is conferring with other men. Now he is conferring with flesh and blood, but not until 3 years later.
Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and stayed with him 15 days.
Mm-hmm.
But other of the apostles saw I none. I didn't see any of the other apostles except James, the Lord's brother.
Yeah. Now, if you're wondering which James of the many that there were, we've kind of narrowed that down pretty good right here.
He said it. But I didn't see any of the other apostles except James, the Lord's brother. For the first time, really, isn't it?
For the first time since his conversion.
For the first time, period. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, he could have met them before. Okay.
Yeah, it's possible that he knew who they were.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that what he learned was not by flesh and blood, and especially Peter, James, and John. His conversion took place on the road to Damascus. His training took place in the Arabian desert. His teaching took place from Jesus. We don't know exactly what that looks like. Was this the Holy Ghost, the great teacher, teaching him? We just don't know. We don't know if this Jesus was walking around the way he did. We know he did appear after his resurrection to them. I don't know if this is Jesus appearing again, but I've got a strange feeling that what he learned through the Holy Ghost, the great teacher, or Christ manifested himself, was all about sin, righteousness, and judgment. Jesus said that after he left, the Comforter would come and he would teach very comforting messages on three subjects: sin, righteousness, and judgment. So we know what Paul learned about. Now, the other thing that I can tell you is that these are the three things Paul taught about. He taught about sin and that it had been done away with. Paul taught about righteousness and that it was imputed to all, the same that sin was imputed by the first Adam, that the last Adam imputed righteousness to all. We learn about judgment from Paul and that it was all executed at the cross. The consistency of the message from Jesus's perspective before Paul ever comes on the scene, what Jesus says is going to be taught after he is ascended to his Father, then shows up clearly in Paul's messages. I mean, the forensics of this is so absolute. And the forensics of this are very tangible, Don. I hope this is thrilling people as much as it does me. I want you guys to be so sold on Paul's gospel. I want you to be sold on the fact that Peter, James, and John equals flesh and blood.
Look, if you are not sold on the gospel of Paul, and we've said this before and we're going to keep saying it, if you took Paul out of the New Testament, you would know nothing about predestination, justification, sanctification, glorification, salvation. All you would know about is, if you don't do what we tell you, guess what? There's a hot place for you, brother. And that's it. You take Paul out, and suddenly all of the most highly prized, bloody doctrines of Christianity, bam, they're gone out of the Bible.
And so he makes it clear he didn't see anyone else. He follows up with just a little bit of history. Let's skip that part, leave it for folks to read, and let's go to chapter 2, because this is really after Paul fills in here, after verse 19, then it picks up in chapter 2, verse 1. So let's start there with this.
Then, 14 years after I went up to again to Jerusalem with Barnabas, and I took Titus with me.
Let's get this timeline down. We've identified the persons we're wanting to emphasize the timeline. Now, at this time, during the first, okay, we're talking about 15, for the first 18 years of Paul's ministry, for the first 18 years.
How's your math? It's 3 years and then 14.
And then 14.
That's 17, isn't
it? Oh, I'm sorry, 17. Well,
I'm sorry, I forgot that you're working on East Tennessee East Tennessee math. Okay, I got it.
17 years that we're talking about, the first 17 years of Paul's ministry, he spent 15 days with Peter. He saw James. It's like over across the courtyard. Oh, there's James. Oh, hey there, James. That's about all you can get out of this. Why? He was there. Why was James unwilling to meet with Paul or vice versa? Paul had presented himself in Jerusalem. And it's, I mean, folks, just look at this for what it is. I didn't see any of the other disciples. I saw James, but I spent 15 days with Peter. Man, you can almost see them telling Peter, Peter, you do something with him.
I like that.
Let him stay with you. But whatever you do, just keep him away from the rest of us. And then James walks by the courtyard one day, and it's like, oh, there's James. It's like, yeah, there's James. Let's go back in and have dinner now. Now, I'm sorry. I'm totally implying all of this. But
now,
folks,
you're putting a lot of flesh to these bones. But, hey.
He was visiting them. He went to Jerusalem to see them. Now, don't tell me they didn't know who Paul was enough to where that they would not have taken some priority to sit down and talk with him, either as an enemy or as a brother.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the two. This is the man who persecuted the church. Maybe you don't believe in his conversion. Wouldn't you want to sit down and talk to him?
And in the meantime, the Way was just another sect of Judaism. They had good connections. Paul had been out of the scene for 3 years. As far as the people who had commissioned him, it looked like he had either died or done a runner.
Yes.
But,
yep, yep.
I mean, these apostles should have had better connections than Paul by this time. And still they didn't want to see him. How interesting.
And then he says, then 14 years later, I went up again to Jerusalem. He said, "I now he has Barnabas. Barnabas was one of his traveling companions and took Titus with me also. Titus was also a sometime traveling companion with Paul. And then in verse 2, where are we now in this story?
And I went up by revelation and communicated unto them that gospel which I preach amongst Gentiles, but privately to them who were of reputation, who seemed. Now, the word is, dokeo means to think. It doesn't mean truthfully or untruthfully, but really this phrase means to them who thought they were worth something, or to them who thought they had a reputation, or to them who thought they were important.
So kind of like to them who seemed to be pillars.
Well, I was leaving that for you, mate, yeah. and that will come up here. But privately to them who were of reputation, lest by any means I had run or had run in vain. Now, what he appears to be saying there is, I went to the people who looked important to me, who held out that they were important, so that I could confirm that I hadn't, like, preached in vain or run in vain.
Yeah. Now, we're going to find out who those people are. Again, the consistency of this letter is very ironclad. I hear Paul's conflict. Oh, man, have I felt this conflict. Trying so hard to give credit to those who believe they deserve it in Christianity so that I can try to get them to listen to enough gospel to where that my efforts would not be completely useless.
And how did that work out for you, Mike?
Well, another thing that I empathize with is that it worked out for me just about the same way it did Paul. In fact, I'd say exactly the way it did, except my head has not wound up in a basket yet. So here Paul is stressing to us. Now, see, people say, well, I don't understand why Paul went through the purification rites. Folks, he was trying to keep his voice in the mix of being heard.
Now, you're talking about what happened in Acts 21 when James,
yes,
close to a quarter of a century after the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, commanded Paul, James, as the head of the alleged Christian church, commanded Paul to make another blood sacrifice of a lamb and a couple of pigeons and a few other things, and also to do that for four other guys. You're talking about that, are you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know, as he said, I've become all things to all men, that I might by all means win some, you know.
I love goodness. That about Paul. He really did. I mean, Paul was the guy who said, when in Rome, do as the Romans. He really was, I think, the ultimate pragmatist. Whatever it took to win people to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you talk about having to set aside ego to be able to do that. My goodness. I think Paul got bolder as the years went by. Once you began to realize that no matter how softly you say the truth, it still is not going to change the minds of those who oppose it. It doesn't make any difference how you say it. So I think we can actually track a progression of Paul. I think by the time he wrote the book of Romans, it was just like, you know, hey, dudes, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done everything, and now, gloves off, here comes the gospel. And we're going to be going through that, kind of like you and I are here, into the book of Romans, taking into consideration all that we've learned. And we're going to go back through Romans again, starting in chapter 1 and going through chapter 11.
At Calgary, at the upcoming conference.
Mm-hmm. At Calgary in the upcoming conference. Coming so close to us now, that is the 14th, 15th, and the 16th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Carriage House.
And who do people contact if they want to know more?
Victor Brennan is in charge of the shindigs there. Vic's phone number is 403-686-0841.
And do we have any special rates for our attendees, our guests?
Yes, all they have to do is say that they are with Grace Conferences and they're going to get a discount on their room.
And who would they say that to?
To the reservation person at the front desk.
Of what? Hotel?
Carriage House.
This is like pulling bloody teeth, mate.
I've already told them it was the Carriage House.
No, you didn't.
Yes, it did. You wait till you listen to this recording again.
Oh, you wait till you hear. I'm going to leave all of this crap in. Okay, it's a Carriage House Inn on McLeod Trail, just a tad out of the of downtown Calgary. Mm-hmm. And okay, so you're going to tell me any of your secrets before you go and preach there? Are you just going to keep me in the dark?
Because I need to ask you some questions, I'll be telling you some of it.
Okay. Yeah, it's always promises with you. Okay.
All right. We're up to verse 4 of chapter 2.
Verse 3. We've not covered 3 yet.
Okay. So keep reading if you would.
So keep reading in verse 13, Don.
When did 3 come to 13? Are you okay?
What?
I'm not reading in verse 13. I'm reading in verse 3.
Verse 3.
Yeah, you said that. Oh, geez. We're both getting too off of this.
Verse 3 of chapter 2 of Galatians, but neither Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, or he's making the point that he is a non-Jew, was compelled to be circumcised. And that because of false brethren unawares brought in who came in privily to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus. Now, I want to ask you a question, Michael.
Oh, no. I knew this one was coming.
Where would they privily spy out whether someone was circumcised or not?
Don, I'm going to let you try to figure that out.
Well, I'm going to suggest that when they went around the back to the public urinals, I'm going to guess that these peeping bloody Toms that called false brethren, and we have peeping Toms in modern religion, they'll report back on you to see if you said the right thing or did the right thing or were you caught having a beer in a pub. I mean, dear God. Okay, so I'm going to read this verse now. And that because of peeping Toms unawares brought in who came in to the urinals to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage.
To whom we gave place by subjection, no, not for an hour.
Clearly you don't trust me to read anymore.
That the truth of the gospel might continue. We're trying to continue on with the truth of the gospel here.
Oh, okay. Well, gee, who am
I? I just wanted to get you over this, the bump here.
Okay, dear. All right, mate.
So, and now, who are these people? Where did these spies come from?
They're Peeping Toms.
Where did these Peeping Toms come from?
At last.
So let's now, so far, now we know where Paul is. He's back in Jerusalem. We know that his last trip that was 14 years before, we know that. And so let's keep reading on down through here, beginning in verse 6, Don.
You trust me to keep reading?
I do, with all my heart.
Yeah. All right. But of those who seemed to be somewhat.
So he's hearkening back now to the statement that he made in verse 2, right?
It sure seems like that. Now, that word seemed, but of those who seemed to be somewhat, he still uses that word to think. So those who thought themselves to be some of mm-hmm. some value or somewhat, whatever they were, it makes no matter to me.
Now, we know who they were already. They've already been named.
And now he's saying, they weren't worth a hill of beans to me.
This is where he does his Shania Twain. That don't impress me much.
I love it. It makes no matter to me. God accepts no man's person.
Yes, including his own disciples.
And brother.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that word person is proposon, and it means, you know, when John Wayne did all those old westerns, and they built all the sets for him to ride into town, and how those sets, they had nothing. They were nothing. All they were fronts. They were just a big old front as they were riding into town, and if mm-hmm. they needed a saloon scene, well, they built a saloon, and that was somewhere else on the set. That is what this word means, person. It means a front. It means a front. That's exactly. God accepts no man's front. For they who, again, thought themselves in conference, once they got themselves into a bit of a cluster, they really thought themselves to be important then. For they who seemed to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me.
Yeah, and now he goes to naming names again.
But this is brother of Jesus. Surely the brother of Jesus could add something to him.
No, I think this is where Paul is addressing the nepotism that was going on here. And nepotism as far as family is concerned, and nepotism that just because they were Jesus's disciples before, that they're going to be approved apostles after.
And let me make it very clear once again that his family, it was his family. Now, in ancient Israel, what would happen is the oldest brother would be the nominee of what the family said. And Jesus, now people are saying, oh, he's beside himself. He's mad. He's a retard. He's talking gibberish. He's a gibberer. And it says his family tried to constrain him, thinking that he was mentally touched. He was beside himself. He deserved to be in an asylum. So let me just remind you, let me just remind us all of that, the fact that this was his family. But contrarywise, or if you like, but to the opposite, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcision was to Peter, I've got to stop here. Can I stop here?
Sure.
I thought when Peter was given the vision of animals, unclean animals coming down,
mm-hmm.
and God said to him, do not call unclean that which I have, past tense, cleaned, indicating that he'd already cleaned all of the Gentiles or all of the uncircumcision. So Paul now is pushing his point because he realizes that Peter never, he couldn't muster up the courage. You know, someone had to shovel mm-hmm. guts into him to go out to the Gentiles, but it never happened. But contrarywise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed unto me, why did God commit it unto him? Because they ignored the vision that God gave Peter.
Mm-hmm.
So when they saw that, as the gospel of the circumcision was given to Peter, that is, mate, you're talking sarcasm. You're talking more in sarcasm here. You're talking
sarcasm on steroids. because this statement is a sarcastic statement, not a statement of necessary truth.
Dang.
For he that wrought effectually in Peter, he that wrought in Peter was so effectually the apostleship of the circumcision, it is equally mighty in me toward the Gentiles.
So effectually. Oh, gosh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Do you think when he was up in Jerusalem for those 15 days with Peter, that they didn't at least have one conversation about, you know what, Paul, funny thing happened to me. I got this vision of a sheet that was let down out of heaven.
Yeah, and Paul would have said, you know, a funny thing happened to me on the road to Damascus.
Oh,
now, the
boy.
Thing that is that you can count this up to sarcasm is, number one, the point that you made where Jesus himself instructed Peter to include the uncircumcised in the gospel, but also the statement in Acts that says that he called Paul to the Jews and to the Gentiles. So, you see, this is a facetious, sarcastic statement.
But when you say, oh, every word is God-breathed, then you must you must put the best...
You can't see sarcasm
when
you put that in it. But when you take that out, then the sarcasm becomes very evident.
Mm.
Now, people take this, but see, this is not a statement of fact. This is a statement of sarcasm, because the statement in and of itself simply is not a true statement that God called Peter to the circumcision and Paul called Paul to the Gentiles. That is not what happened. I remember so many years ago reading this and being so conflicted, but it says in the book of Acts that God called Paul to the nation of Israel and to the Gentiles, that he called him to both groups to preach the gospel. Now we've got this.
And Paul did that when he went into any town, as near as we can tell in Acts. First place he went, synagogue.
Yeah, so Paul didn't do what he says he did. Even Paul is showing that the statement is sarcastic about him.
Mm.
He's not just being sarcastic about one, but he's showing that, you know, if somebody is better than the other, let's just take it for the way you see it. The way you see it, you're saying that Peter was called to the Jews and I was called to the Gentiles. So, therefore, how can you be better than me? How could you be more than me? Because he that wrought effectually in Peter this ministry to the circumcision has done equally the same ministry in me. So don't give me the you're better than I am. So Paul is using sarcasm with them to validate in their mindset he's as good of an apostle as they are.
Boom, boom.
All right?
I'm waiting for the next verse, and you keep putting it off, and I keep wanting it.
Don, would you like to read verse 9 for us?
And when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars.
Oh, maybe a little bit more sarcasm. It seems pervasive.
Well, I'll use the Greek, who dokeoed, who thought themselves to be pillars. Now, he's used the word dokeo, three times. And every time it was about people, flesh and blood, men. He never actually names them. But now he says, using that same word, dokeo, meaning who think. Now, it doesn't. That word does not translate as seemed, as the King James says it. It translates only to think. So when James, Cephas, and John, who thought themselves to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given unto me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the heathen, or the ethnos again, or the non-Jews, so that we should go unto the non-Jews and they should go unto the circumcision, meaning the Jews.
A convenient political settlement to their dispute. But see, this was a settlement between them, not a declaration that came from God. We can go back and prove that to you over and over and over again.
Did James ever say anything that came from God, in your opinion?
I mean, in my opinion,
I'll give you my opinion when you're ready for it. But
well, let's go with yours right now.
No, my opinion is I've yet to find one. And
it is hard to find.
And one. I have been reading the Bible a year or two now, you know.
It is difficult to find. Yeah. You know, you would say, oh, well, James is the one that says that God will give wisdom to any man who asks for it liberally.
But he never got any himself, the dolt. I mean, must be he was asking for it wrong.
And when Paul's revelation is Christ has become unto us wisdom.
Wow.
So, James always wanted us to search for what we already had. He wanted us to try to become who we already were.
And if we didn't find that, then we'd go, as Peter would say, to hell, because as John would say, we were not in the light.
Yep.
Wow.
So please don't think that this was a resolution that was amicable or God-inspired at all. This was a way to keep the heat down. So on to verse 10.
In verse 10 of chapter 2 of Galatians, only they wanted that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. In other words, Paul saying, I never didn't remember the poor, but they made a big deal out of the fact that we should remember the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And who was an Ebionite, or who was the apostle of the poor? That was James. And who needed help from the Macedonians later, because they were so broke that they couldn't even rub two pennies together? Oh, well, that'd be the Church of Jerusalem led by, oh yes, James.
Mm-hmm.
What the? It was an Israeli thing that you looked after the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And they honestly thought that Paul was so not an Israeli that he wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Are they? Do you think they're just trying to save face, Mike?
Well, they're coming from a position of James, who at least James we know for sure had a commitment to poverty, a vow of poverty on his life, and you think that maybe James had influenced Peter and John over to his Ebionite ways of this vow of poverty that he was in. This is certainly part of the other gospel. Well, we know it's not, we don't even have to wonder. This is part of the other gospel that Paul was referring to. He already established that himself. And is this how this vow of poverty thing got into Catholicism?
Oh, with the Franciscan monks and...
Absolutely. So let's say James converts Peter. Peter becomes the hero of Catholicism. And Catholicism became obsessed with the vow of poverty for everybody except those at the top. And here in verse 10, I think Paul's hearkening very much to the issue of their position on poverty. When he said, for him to remember the poor, I mean, are they asking him to give some of his money to them? Because, I mean, didn't James have this position? Yeah, maybe this is where the 10% back to the ministry you came out of came from.
Yeah, support head office.
Yeah. And that certainly stuck throughout Catholicism, that's for sure. We don't know that that's where this was established, but and Paul saying, I was always forward to do that. I you know, dudes, come on. I believe here is, again, some sarcasm from Paul. Let me tell you, so Paul's saying, let me tell you the only thing they told me that was worth anything at all. The only thing they told me that had any value or worth was, oh, remember the poor. And the only thing they told me, I was already doing anyway. So that's how valuable Paul found Peter, James, and John to be in his life. Now, you can decide what value Peter, James, and John have in your life if you want. Paul has already spoken to what degree of value Jesus's apostles, specifically Peter, James, and John, had in his life, in his ministry. The only thing they contributed to Paul was an instruction to do what he was already doing. Don, I don't think we're going to get this all done in one show. It's just too dang good to try to. You see, because of our previous research, we now see clearly what Paul was saying to the church at Galatia. We see clearly who he was talking about. We see clearly, because we've done such extensive research, we now can see the sarcasm here. You see, if we had not read the factual statements of previous and earlier research, you would not be able to hear the sarcasm. All right, so what is sarcasm? Do you need to know the person a bit from whom the sarcasm is coming to understand they're being sarcastic? Yes, you would have to be. Let's say that you are an interior decorator and you're working with another interior decorator. Now, one interior decorator loves using black as a basic color. The other one enjoys using white as a basic color to work from. So the one who likes white walks into a decoration that the other person has done in black, and he walks in and says, oh, wow, isn't the black just beautiful? Now, you see, we know that sarcasm, right? We know it is sarcasm because we already know the view of the one, the interior decorator, who detests having black as a basic color scheme. That's how you know. Now, why are we able to extract this now? And we weren't able to extract all of this previously because it took our research into the depths of the souls of these men that are being spoken about. Now we get to look at their at these communications between them, and suddenly the sarcasm is everywhere. We don't have to wonder about it. All right, so Don, we're going to pick up in verse 11.
All right, okay, chapter 2 of Galatians, verse 11. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was blameworthy.
He was to be blamed. Now, let's just take this one verse. How do you say that all of this is, everything that Peter said and did is scripture, and everything that Paul said was scripture, and even acknowledge that this verse is in that universe? If you acknowledge this verse is even in that universe, you cannot hold to the position that everything that Peter said was scripture and everything Paul said was scripture. Paul is making it clear, in his view, one of them is right and the other one is wrong. He didn't say we just had a conversation about the disagreement. I withstood him. What does that term mean in the Greek? Sometimes these carry a little more punch.
Anthistemi means I opposed him. I said, it's like having a debate and I opposed him.
Just, yeah, totally opposed him. To the face.
I opposed him to the front. Actually, it's the same word as proposin in Greek as was used earlier. I don't care who they were because God is no respecter of person. Proposin,
right.
Same word. And it means a front like the old Western taverns. So I opposed him to his front because he was blameworthy.
Yeah, he deserved the blame. All right, we are picking up in verse 12.
Okay, but when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was blameworthy. In front of or before certain men came from James, he ate with the Gentiles.
Now let's stop right there. All right.
Dang. We don't get far, do we?
Who are these guys? These guys that were sent by James into Peter's presence. What were they doing? This is the same posse. What were they doing to Peter? They were spying out his liberty to eat with Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is not a different posse, folks. Now we know where the posse came from. Where did the posse come from to spy out the liberty of Paul? The same posse that was sent to spy out the liberty that Peter had to eat with Gentiles.
And they were two other things. They thought themselves to be important,
yep.
Number one. And number two, they had a front. They all had this front.
So here is the man who has made himself the head of the church. He has a posse. Not only was Paul a victim of this posse, Peter was a victim of this posse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where Paul was concerned, Paul said, we didn't give place to the posse for 1 hour. Not an hour. But look what happened to Peter when the posse showed up from James to spy out his liberty in eating with Gentiles.
You had the option of either liberty or preserving your front. Before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles, but when, so he was into the hot dogs and he was into the ethnic dancing and he was into all of that, you know, the good, you know, spare ribs, pork spare ribs and everything. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision.
Fearing.
The word's very clear. He feared the ones. He was frightened and alarmed, and he held in awe those which were of the circumcision.
Now, those who were of the circumcision, this is coming from James. He's the one who sent the posse out. These are the ones that he feared. He feared the men sent from James.
Yes.
And because he feared them who were of the circumcision. Who was of the circumcision? James was of the circumcision. This man, James, was absolutely incredible at surgically removing the gospel out of the gospel. He was removing freedom from the gospel. Now, think about this, folks. This man sent out two separate posses, maybe the very same people. He sends them into Paul's presence to find out about who's getting circumcised and who's not. Then he's got he sends out another posse, directly stated that this posse came from James. There's no contradiction here. And sent him into Peter's presence and his meetings with other people because he had the liberty Look, every time you see James showing up, he's there to take away freedom. He's there to take away liberty. And with Paul, it was with circumcision. And with Peter, it was eating with Gentiles. And we know the story. Just you've already brought it up. Now think of the sway the man had. Jesus himself let down a sheet from heaven for this man, Peter. Jesus himself was the one who explained to Peter that Gentiles had already been cleansed. Peter himself has chosen to obey James and disobey Jesus. I can't say that strong enough. Peter chose to obey James. The only way he could obey James, number one, he obeyed him out of fear, but the only way he could obey him was to be in direct contradiction and rebellion to the words of Christ himself about Gentiles. Now, remember, Paul said we didn't give place to them for a moment. But look what it says about Peter. Peter grew weak in the knees. He was terrified of these people. Can you imagine, folks, this sounds like being met by the mafia. They weren't there to say, well, you know, we disagree with you about this. He was in fear. This is the response that a man like Peter, this man walked on water, for God's sakes, folks.
Yeah.
This man walked with Christ. This man was told by Jesus not to reject Gentiles, and he chose to obey James and to reject the commandment that Christ gave him. He could not do both. By doing one, he would deny the other. So now we've got Peter denying Christ again by obeying Jesus's brother. Now, that's not the end of this story. Let's pick up in verse 13. Now, remember, Barnabas and Titus were all a part of Paul's travelings and agreeing with Paul. Now, how persuasive? Now, I'm telling you, folks, I'm beginning to see the Jewish mafia here. How do you explain the fear that struck Peter's heart? It doesn't say that he was confused because of the disagreement. He was petrified.
So much for fear not.
Yeah, fear not, except James. You better fear him, evidently.
Something happened in that early church that caused this response. Fortunately, Paul had not been infected with what these others had been infected with, but something clearly had happened to make, and it was it miraculous? I doubt it. I doubt that it was a miracle like walking on water. I doubt that there was anything even halfway up to what Jesus did. There was something else.
Mm-hmm.
There was something that took place in this early church that caused Peter to live in fear of James. So let's keep reading.
Yeah. Go right ahead.
And the other Jews likewise were hypocritical, or dissembled is the word that's used here, but the word really means hypocritical. And the other Jews also acted hypocritically, likewise with him, Peter, insomuch that Barnabas...
Now, this is shocking.
Insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their front. Now, the word is hypocrisis in the Greek, and it just simply means their pretense. If you like, or their hypocrisy. So there was a good man, Barnabas, who eventually separated from Paul. Who knows how much this had to do with it. But Barnabas also was taken up with, carried away with, their hypocrisy.
Well, you certainly can't separate it from his separation from Paul. folks, can you be brought back into subjection to legalism after coming to the gospel? With a teacher like Paul around? Yes, you can be seduced back again. Why do we recommend the CPR of the gospel? Folks, it's not just a little cliche. It's not just a little ditty. It's not a way to keep the ministry on your mind. It's not a way, it's not product placement. I've had everybody to tell me, oh, Mike, that's good product placement. And it's like I want to slap them, to be honest with you, because that's not what these things are. We are recommending these things to you because we know the power of legalism to reach in. If they could take away one of Paul's traveling companions. Now, the thing that we have going for us is that Christianity is not nearly as persuasive as these guys were. Christianity's all over the frickin' board. We have an easier time dealing with legalistic Christians than what Paul had dealing with the legalist Jews under James' authority. Folks, this was mafia-like based on the response that his posse got from these people, including Peter. And now, look, Barnabas now has been carried away by it. I don't apologize for my passion in this.
Now, the interesting thing in this, Mike, is that Barnabas had a mixed background. He was a Cypriot-born Jew, so he was a Gentile and a Jew. He was, who knows, he may have been half Jew, half Gentile, but whatever he was, he had lived enough in I was going to say earlier. He'd spent enough of his life in the Gentile world to know that to be wiser than this, in my opinion.
Yes.
And yet he had enough of the Jew in him that when these people came down from James, and we got to remember the Jews in that day and age, they all went to Jerusalem for certain feasts. So he was very familiar with Jerusalem. He was familiar with James, obviously, because of his fear here. But whatever happened here was enough not only to bring fear onto Peter, but also onto Barnabas. Okay. So now we're going to hear what Paul says. Paul said, and when I saw that they walked not uprightly. Now that word is orthopedo or orthopedeo. Which is where we get the English word orthopedics, when they did not walk straight according to the truth, when they did not walk according to the truth, how else could you walk but non-uprightly, of the gospel. Now, there is a truth to the gospel to which they were not walking. According to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before all of them. Now, this took some guts, mate.
Oh, my.
Imagine how Peter felt. I said to Peter, so Peter extricates himself from eating with the Gentiles. He sits down at the table with the Jews. This is the very first case of denominationalism that I know in the Bible, because back then when you ate, you also toasted Jesus, which was called the Agape Love Feast. And with wine and bread, you simply remembered the Lord. Now you had a table of the Lord that applied to Gentiles and a table of the Lord that applied to Jews. So for me, this is the first recorded case of denominationalism. If you want to know where all the crap came from in this 21st century with over 40,000 with unbelievable different schisms, sects, and denominations, here is where it started. Not walking uprightly, according to the truth of the gospel. I said unto Peter before all of them, if you, being a Jew, live after the manner of Gentiles. I mean, did he spill the beans or did he spill the beans? Now Peter is cowering because Paul's spilling the beans in front of these other dopes that came down from Jerusalem. And not as do the Jews. Why are you compelling the Gentiles to live as the Jews? What he did was he didn't even say, oh, you're a hypocrite, you're this, you're that. He just simply said, the only thing he could have said that made Peter pull his head in and feel like the fool that he was. I don't know any other way to say it. We who are Jews by nature, verse 15, and not sinners of the Gentiles. Now, what he's talking about is the fact that all heathen were considered to be non-Jews and therefore sinners. We who are Jews by nature, we're natural Jews, and not sinners. And Barnabas, the Hellenistic Jew, the Cypriot Jew, is listening to this. You can imagine what's going through his mind. We who are Jews by nature are not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law. Now, he's saying this in front of these turkeys that are representatives of James, who believes that a man is justified by the works of the law. We know that very clearly from James, mm-hmm. his epistle, which, by the way, he dedicated to Jews, not to Gentiles, so I'm more than happy disregarding James's epistle entirely. Knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus, genitive case, of Jesus,
yes.
of Jesus.
That's exactly right.
Golly. And
John, this is what the debate was about. I mean, now this, I think this is as far as we're going to go on this one. We are on overload on information, even for ourselves, much less for the folks listening.
Have you had a gutful of me interrupting, have you?
No.
Are you sure? You're not telling me a porky pie, are you?
I've had a wonderful time on this PowerCast. Here are the harsh, bright line, conclusive realities of what took place right here. History tells us, you're not ready for what I'm about to say.
Uh-oh.
But I've got to tell you, history, from this point forward, explains to us that Paul lost this debate.
Well, we see even to this day that politics and power will always outmaneuver mm-hmm. the truth.
I'm on the verge of tears, to be real honest with you. The impact that this is having on me at this moment is deep, and it's very palpable for me. We in the Gospel Revolution must understand we are trying to pick up at this point 2,000 years ago. Folks, this is where we're trying to pick up and cut through the politics, the religion that was established by James, by a mafia-like group who were out to stamp out any freedom that was perceived to be accomplished by the work of the cross. James's mafia went out to spy on Paul. If there's anything you need to stop and rejoice about at this moment, is that Paul never gave in. Even though his traveling companion, Barnabas, was also carried away by this. Now, they won, folks. I'm sorry. I have to tell you this. but they won. The doctrine that was preached by James and all the doctrines of Paul and John being overseen by James, they won. Even though the vast majority of the writings in the New Testament are Paul's, Paul is quoted as a byword from the foundation of the doctrine of James, Peter, and John. We are trying to force the, what has happened in Christianity is they've tried to force feed that somehow you get dribblings of Paul's teachings around the solid granite of James, Peter, and John. But folks, we've accepted a reality, and now here is the hard reality. We teach a gospel that Paul says there is none other than this one. And the other one, which now rules the world, rules the entire planet, is not a gospel at all. Folks, to tell you that this has brought me to an emotional eclipse is not an exaggeration at all. The gravity of what we are doing, please, please don't ever view those of us who are on staff here with Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution ever make you feel that you are somehow separate from that. We need you. We need you to know that your value is just as great as ours, whatever you might perceive our value to be. You must know your value in this, just that we have participants. We have pastors abandoning their life's careers, their life's jobs, their own only support. Already this year, too, have quit by becoming persuaded of something so powerful. The men who are bringing this show to you today have come to this very raw conclusion also. And I am completely at a loss for words at this point, and I don't know anything to do but just thank you so much for your participation. We are we're determined to change the world.
And so it is, family and friends, so we must leave you. If you would like to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all of the difference for somebody else, just like you once were, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. If you have any questions, feel free to record them on United States number 1234564-0971. And remember, in the words of Mike Turi, we don't give God glory. We are God's glory. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where somebody amazingly painted graffiti on our one horse trough. Words fail me.
And it's good night from myself, Michael Williams, here in Palm Beach Gardens. Thank you, guys. We leave you with those magnificent words that Paul spoke, knowing this, that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Christ.
Wow. We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, We're going to do the same thing all over again, only
always better.
Okay, then.
Did you put it in the paper? Did you write it down in stone? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard, make a little sign, email or do Facebook? Anyway, it's fine. Gotta get out the gospel. Gotta get out the gospel.
Tithe and bring your shame, bring your guilt and bring your pain. Don't you know that's not your name? You will always be much more to me. And every day I wrestle with the voices that keep telling me I'm not right, but that's alright, 'cause I hear a voice and it calls me redeemed. When others say and greater is the one living inside of me than he who is living in the world. In the world. In the world. And greater is the one living inside of me than he who is living in the world. Bring your doubt. Bring your fears, bring your hurt, and bring your tears. There'll be no condemnation here. You are holy, righteous, and redeemed. And every time I fall, there'll be those who will call me a mistake. Well, that's okay, 'cause I hear a voice and it calls me redeemed. When others say I'll never be enough,
gospel revolution.